or he bedded down. Beowulf, that prince of goodness, proudly asserted, "When it comes to fighting, I count myself as dangerous any day as Grendel. So it won't be a cutting edge I'll wield to mow him down, easily as I might. He has no idea of the arts of war, of shield or sword play, although he does possess a wild strength. No weapons, therefore, for either this night. Unarmed he shall face me, if face me he dares. And may the divine Lord in his wisdom grant the glory of victory to whichever side he sees fit." Then down the brave man lay with his bolster under his head, and his whole company of sea rovers at rest beside him. None of them expected he would ever see his homeland again, or get back to his native place and the people who reared him. They knew too well the way it was before, how often the Danes had fallen prey to death in the mead hall. But the Lord was weaving a victory on his war loom for the Weathergeats. Through the strength of one they all prevailed. They would crush their enemy and come through in triumph and gladness. The truth is clear. Almighty God rules over mankind, and always has. Then, out of the night, came the Shadow Stalker, stealthy and swift. The hall guards were slack, asleep at their posts, all except one. It was widely understood that as long as God disallowed it, the fiend could not bear them to his Shadowborn. One man, however, was in fighting mood, awake and on edge, spoiling for action. In off the moors, down through the mist bands, God-cursed Grendel came greedily loping. The bane of the race of men roamed forth, hunting for a prey in the high hall. Under the cloud murk he moved towards it, until it shone above him, a sheer keep of fortified gold. Nor was that the first time he had scouted the grounds of Hrothgar's dwelling, although never in his life, before or since, did he find harder fortune or hall defenders. Spurned and joyless, he journeyed on ahead and arrived at the barn. The iron-braced door turned on its hinge when his hands touched it. Then his rage boiled over. He ripped open the mouth of the building, maddening for blood, pacing the length of the patterned floor with his loathsome tread, while a baleful light, flame more than light, flared from his eyes. He saw many men in the mansion, sleeping, a ranked company of kinsmen and warriors quartered together. And his glee was demonic, picturing the mayhem. Before morning, he would rip life from limb and devour them, feed on their flesh. But his fate that night was due to change. His days of ravening had come to an end. Mighty and canny, Hujalak's kinsman was keenly watching for the first move the monster would make. Nor did the creature keep him waiting, but struck suddenly and started in. He grabbed and mauled a man on his bench, bit into his bone lappings, bolted down his blood, and gorged on him in lumps, leaving the body utterly lifeless, eaten up hand and foot. Venturing closer, his talon was raised to attack Beowulf where he lay on the bed. He was bearing in with open claw when the alert hero's comeback and armlock forestalled him utterly. The captain of evil discovered himself in a hand grip harder than anything he had ever encountered in any man on the face of the earth. Every bone in his body quailed and recoiled, but he could not escape. He was desperate to flee to his den and hide with the devil's litter, for in all his days he had never been clamped or cornered like this. Then Huyalak's trusty retainer recalled his bedtime speech, sprang to his feet, and got a firm hold. Fingers were bursting, the monster backtracking, the man overpowering. The dread of the land was desperate to escape, to take a roundabout road and flee to his lair in the fens. The latching power in his fingers weakened. It was the worst trip the terrormonger had taken to Herat. And now the timbers trembled and sang, a hall session that harrowed every Dane inside the stockade. Stumbling in fury, the two contenders crashed through the building. The hall clattered and hammered, but somehow survived the onslaught and kept standing. It was handsomely structured, a sturdy frame braced with the best of blacksmith's work, inside and out. The story goes that as the pair struggled, mead benches were smashed and sprung off the floor, gold fittings and all. Before then, no shielding elder would believe there was any power or person upon earth capable of wrecking their horn-rigged hall unless the burning embrace of a fire engulf it in flame. Then an extraordinary wail arose, and bewildering fear came over the Danes. Everyone felt it who heard that cry as it echoed off the wall, a god-cursed scream and strain of catastrophe, the howl of the loser, the lament of the hell serf keening his wound. He was overwhelmed, manacled tight by the man who of all men was foremost and strongest in the days of this life. But the Earl Troop's leader was not inclined to allow his caller to depart alive. He did not consider that life of much account to anyone anywhere. Time and again, Beowulf's warriors worked to defend their lord's life, laying about them as best they could with their ancestral blades. Stalwart in action, they kept striking out on every side, seeking to cut straight to the soul. When they joined the struggle, there was something they could not have known at the time, that no blade on earth, no blacksmith's art, could ever damage their demon opponent. He had conjured the harm from the cutting edge of every weapon. But his going away out of this world, and the days of his life, would be agony to him, and his alien spirit would travel far into fiend's keeping. Then he who had harrowed the hearts of men with pain and affliction in former times, and had given offense also to God, found that his bodily powers failed him. Huyalak's kinsmen kept him helplessly locked in a hand grip. As long as either lived, he was hateful to the other. The monster's whole body was in pain. A tremendous wound appeared on his shoulder. Sinews split, and the bone lappings burst. Beowulf was granted the glory of winning. Grendel was driven under the fenbanks, fatally hurt, to his desolate lair. His days were numbered. The end of his life was coming over him, he knew it for certain. And one bloody clash had fulfilled the dearest wishes of the Danes. The man who had lately landed among them, proud and sure, had purged the hall, kept it from harm. He was happy with his night work and the courage he had shown. The Geat captain had boldly fulfilled his boast to the Danes. He had healed and relieved a huge distress, unremitting humiliations, the hard fate they'd been forced to undergo, no small affliction. Clear proof of this could be seen in the hand the hero displayed high up near the roof, the whole of Grendel's shoulder and arm, his awesome grasp. Then morning came, and many a warrior gathered, as I've heard, around the gift hall, clan chiefs flocking from far and near down wide-ranging roads, wondering greatly at the monster's footprints. His fatal departure was regretted by no one who witnessed his trail. The ignominious marks of his flight, where he'd skulked away, exhausted in spirit and beaten in battle, bloodying the path, hauling his doom to the demon's mere. The bloodshot water wallowed and surged. There were loathsome upthrows and overturnings of waves and gore and wound slurry. With his death upon him, he had dived deep into his marsh den, drowned out his life and his heathen soul. Hell claimed him there. Then away they rode, the old retainers, with many a young man following after, a troop on horseback, in high spirits on their bay steeds. Beowulf's doings were praised over and over again. Nowhere, they said, north or south, between the two seas or under the tall sky on the broad earth, was there anyone better to raise a shield or to rule a kingdom. Yet there was no laying of blame on their lord, the noble Hrothgar. He was a good king. At times the warband broke into a gallop, letting their chestnut horses race wherever they found the going good on those well-known tracks. Meanwhile, a thane of the king's household, a carrier of tales, a traditional singer deeply schooled in the lore of the past, linked a new theme to a strict meter. The man started to recite with skill, rehearsing Beowulf's triumphs and feats in well-fashioned lines, entwining his words. He told what he'd heard repeated in songs about Sigemund's exploits, all of those many feats and marvels, the struggles and wanderings of Walsh's son, things unknown to anyone except to Fitala. Feuds and foul doings confided by uncle to nephew when he felt the urge to speak of them. Always they had been partners in the fight, friends in need. They killed giants. Their conquering swords had brought them down. After his death, Sigemund's glory grew and grew because of his courage when he killed the dragon, the guardian of the hoard. Under Greystone he had dared to enter, all by himself, to face the worst without Fitala. But it came to pass that his sword plunged right through those radiant scales and drove into the wall. The dragon died of it. His daring had given him total possession of the treasure hoard, his to dispose of however he liked. He loaded a boat. Walsh's son waited her hold with dazzling spoils. The hot dragon melted. Sigemund's name was known everywhere. He was utterly valiant and venturesome, a fence round his fighters, and flourished, therefore, after King Heremod's prowess declined and his campaigns slowed down. The king was betrayed, ambushed in Jutland, overpowered and done away with. The waves of his grief had beaten him down, made him a burden, a source of anxiety to his own nobles. That expedition was often condemned in those earlier times by experienced men, men who relied on his lordship for redress, who presumed that the part of a prince was to thrive on his father's throne and defend the nation, the shielding land where they lived and belonged, its holdings and strongholds. Such was Beowulf in the affection of his friends and of everyone alive. But evil entered into Heremod. Meanwhile, the Danes kept racing their mounts down sandy lanes. The light of day broke and kept brightening. Bands of retainers galloped in excitement to the gabled hall to see the marvel. and the king himself, guardian of the ring hoard, goodness in person, walked in majesty from the women's quarters with a numerous train, attended by his queen and her crowd of maidens, across to the mead hall. When Hrothgar arrived at the hall, he spoke, standing on the steps under the steep eaves, gazing at the roofwork and Grendel's talon. "First and foremost, let the Almighty Father be thanked for this sight. I suffered a long harrowing by Grendel, but the heavenly shepherd can work his wonders always and everywhere. Not long since, it seemed I would never be granted the slightest solace or relief from any of my burdens. The best of houses glittered and reeked and ran with blood. This one worry outweighed all others, a constant distress to counselors entrusted with defending the people's forts from assault by monsters and demons. But now a man, with the Lord's assistance, has accomplished something none of us could manage before now for all our efforts. Whoever she was who brought forth this flower of manhood, if she is still alive, that woman can say that in her labor the Lord of Ages bestowed a grace on her. So now, Beowulf, I adopt you in my heart as a dear son. Nourish and maintain this new connection, you noblest of men. There'll be nothing you'll want for, no worldly goods that won't be yours. I have often honored smaller achievements, recognized warriors not nearly as worthy, lavished rewards on the less deserving. But you have made yourself immortal by your glorious action. May the God of Ages continue to keep and requite you well. Beowulf, son of Egtheow, spoke. We have gone through with a glorious endeavor, and been much favored in this fight we dared against the unknown. Nevertheless, if you could have seen the monster himself where he lay beaten, I would have been better pleased. My plan was to pounce, pin him down in a tight grip and grapple him to death, have him panting for life, powerless and clasped in my bare hands, his body in thrall. But I couldn't stop him from slipping my hold. The Lord allowed it. My lock on him wasn't strong enough. He struggled fiercely and broke and ran. Yet he bought his freedom at a high price, for he left his hand and arm and shoulder to show he had been here, a cold comfort for having come among us. And now he won't be long for this world. He has done his worst, but the wound will end him. He is hasped and hooped and hurpling with pain, limping and looped in it. Like a man outlawed for wickedness, he must await the mighty judgment of God in majesty. There was less tampering and big talk then from Unverth the boaster, less of his blather as the hall thanes eyed the awful proof of the hero's prowess, the splayed hand up under the eaves, every nail, claw, scale, and spur, every spike and welt on the hand of that heathen brute was like barbed steel. Everybody said there was no honed iron hard enough to pierce him through, no time-proofed blade that could cut his brutal, blood-caked claw. Then the order was given for all hands to help to refurbish Heorot immediately, men and women thronging the wine hall getting it ready. Gold thread shone in the wall hangings, woven scenes that attracted and held the eye's attention. But iron-braced as the inside of it had been, that bright room lay in ruins now. The very doors had been dragged from their hinges. Only the roof remained unscathed, by the time the guilt-fouled fiend turned tail in despair of his life. But death is not easily escaped from by anyone. All of us with souls